transmitted through the atmosphere below, they eventually awaken an echo in the heart of some aspiring soul. A when, lo, a new poem, a new strain of melody, a new harmonious thought, is given to the world. It has been my good fortune to visit once or twice this wonderful city of harmony, and ever after my mind has possessed a new and beautiful picture to hang upon the snowy walls of memory, a picture of harmoniously blended tints, of flowery beds, of sunny fountains, of massive temples, crowded with faces from which all trace of passion hath forever vanished, and which bear only the impress of ineffable peace, where harmony is the life of the spirit, and melody runs like a liquid stream through all the sunny days. A magnificent temple. Imagine, if you can, a magnificent temple built of a kind of white translucent stone, which, as the sunlight falls upon it, glows and sparkles with the bright, prismatic hues of the rainbow. Imagine this temple to be so vast and spacious in its dimensions that its brilliant dome seems to pierce the snowy clouds, while in length it extends as far as the eye can reach. Imagine delicate vines, wreaths and pictures carved exquisitely upon the outer walls of this building, while a magnificent garden, blooming in the rich luxuriance of summer, surrounds it on every side. And after you have imagined all this, you will have a faint idea of that massive temple of harmonial city, in which artists of every grade congregate to pursue their favorite studies. The interior of this splendid palace is hung with richest drapery, and adorned with rarest works of art, creations of those artist spirits who delight to give outward expression to the ideals of beauty within their souls. Mortal eyes have never witnessed such forms of skillful beauteous art, so lifelike in every sense, so soul-thrilling, as are gathered here. Mortal ears fail to catch the celestial tones of harmony, the divine notes of melody, that are uttered here by spirits who appear to be all music, all harmony. The interior of this beautiful building is divided into four spacious compartments, with one vast hall over all. The lower halls are devoted to sculpture, painting, music, and poetry. Each one is fitted up grandly, hung with shimmering drapery, and adorned with forms of peerless beauty. Here the student lingers, his soul entranced with the glory of his work, his being illuminated with the divine inspiration he gathers. The whole edifice, with its splendid appointments, is like a divine poem, a completed strain of harmony, a perfect picture, or a finished statue of grace and symmetry. And the forms and faces of the masters who dispense instruction to the student give glory and benignity to the whole. The vast hall above is the most beautiful place I have ever seen, paved with white and gold, the walls hung with exquisite paintings, adorned with gleaming statuary, save here and there where openings admit the balmy, perfumed air, the ceiling of white and azure, gemmed with golden stars, the shining fountains on the floor, which send up sprays of crystal water, the baskets of richly blooming flowers, swinging here and there, the grand stands of shining gold, where the favored children of genius gather, the silken couches and dais for the visiting companion, all present a scene of richness and beauty difficult to be described. In this place grand entertainments are given, to which the denizens of the city and elsewhere are admitted, to feast the intellect upon the wondrous creations of artist, poet, sculptor, and musician, and to listen to instructive lectures upon the arts. And it is indeed a feast to the soul to attend one of these receptions. It is an experience which draws the spirit upward, and elevates it into a purer, more refined condition, for purity and goodness are the themes of the artist's inspiration, and love broods over all, manifested in the desire to instruct and bless every life. This is one of the largest temples I have ever seen, although many smaller ones, erected for like purposes, are scattered throughout the higher spheres of spirit life. City of Joy. There is a beautiful little city in the Summerland, which, situated between rising hills of ever-glowing verdure, presents an appearance of restful tranquility and harmonious peace. Its name signifies City of Joy. The habitations of this place are all of a circular shape, pavilion-like in appearance, typical of the rounded-out completeness of human life. These buildings are open at the sides, the roofs of shining brightness, supported by columns of white ivory, exquisitely carved, and entwined with clustering plants and flowering vines. They also are arranged in circles or spheres, eight of these homesteads, with their connecting flower gardens, comprising a circle. Here and there are gateways, leading to vast and beautiful grounds, where all that can delight the eye and charm the ear may be found. These gateways are reared of solid alabaster-like stone, in the form of an arch. Everywhere we observe the circle and arch, nowhere do we find sharp corners, or the angular edge. All is smooth, completed, harmonious. The flower beds are in rings, blooming with soft, exquisite tints, and redolent with delicate odors. The inhabitants of this city dwell in unity, cooperate together in associative bodies, each one working for the good of all. Their sphere represents brotherly love and honest fidelity. Their aura is clear, shining and transparent. I understand that these beings rarely, if ever, return to earthly scenes. They have long since passed beyond the conditions of material things. They are without passions, but delight to minister to suffering souls. They understand the art of preparing their beautiful garments from elements gathered from the gardens, and their food likewise grows spontaneously in the shape of rich, juicy, and nutritious fruit. The habits of life of these beings are extremely simple. They have no artificial wants and desires. Their clothing is of the flowing, drapery style. Their homes are simply furnished with furniture framed from tree and shrub, and adorned with vines and flowers. They are a studious people, interested in all that affects humanity, and have groves and temples dedicated to truth, wisdom, and knowledge. Also temples, large rotundas, where the sage and the philosopher, the chemist and the scientist, hold forth in words of wisdom. This place I have seen but once, and then imperfectly. Thither I was guided by a venerable ministering being, who delights to instruct the young and ignorant. But one peculiarity I observed: instead of the brilliant light of golden sunshine pouring down upon the scene, the whole city seemed partially veiled in a peculiar, rose-tinted haze, which threw a delicious sense of beauty over the white homesteads, the gleaming waters of the circular fountains, and the blooming gardens. The inhabitants of this supernal city traverse space mostly by the intensity of will force, but I am told they also possess conveyances for a tilde broken barial travel, circular-shaped, silken-draped air cars, which glide through the atmosphere like graceful birds of golden plumage. These I did not see, but I have seen similar a tilde broken barial cars in other places. Oh, were it possible to convey to you an adequate comprehension of the wonders and beauties of another life than this, it would be a task over which an angel might rejoice. Floralia, the Valley of Flowers. I cannot begin to enumerate to you the beautiful cities of spirit life, and the sweet, outlying country places. Neither can I hope to convey to you a description of the peaceful, glowing valleys and woodlands of the better country. But there are two beautiful valleys of which I feel to speak, and which may give you a conception of the many fertile spots, rich with luxuriant growth, that adorn the land of souls. Floralia, or the Valley of Flowers, is charmingly situated between two ranges of massive mountains, which glow in the sun with more than roseate brightness, or deepen into purple as the cooling shadows ascend their gleaming sides. Long and wide the valley stretches out, sweet and fair, dotted here and there with groves and clumps of trees. A clear and limpid stream of water, reflecting the azure sky, runs through the midst of the valley, which is fed by living springs from the mountain. Clusters of snow-white cottages abound, whose inhabitants are composed of little innocent children, with their guardians, teachers, or spirit parents, for little ones coming to our life, who have no father and mother to greet them, are at once adopted by kind spirits, who devote their lives to their care and guidance. But the most remarkable feature of this valley, and the one from which it derives its name, Floralia, is the lavish profusion of flowers on every hand. The green sward, so like velvet in softness, is literally covered with flowers of every type, degree, and color the whole, forming a magnificent scene of beauty and fragrance, so exquisitely do the colors blend and their odors harmonize. This, you will believe, is the home of honey-loving insects and singing birds, and the whole presents a perfect picture of delight. To this flowery home, little children are brought, who pass out from earth in childhood's hours. Here they are born by loving, ministering angels, and tenderly reared and cherished. Many of these little ones knew not the meaning of care and tenderness on earth, but all are lovingly tended at this place. Here they attend the school of nature, learn of flower and bird and rippling rill, and are instructed in the lessons of life, and the laws of being, by their gentle guardians. Only purity and peace abound here, and the little ones develop all their sweetest attributes of soul. The Valley of Delight. The other vale of which I have spoken is called the Valley of Delight. This valley is somewhat depressed and nearly round, nestling between gigantic hills. It resembles a great green basin set with flowers of many hues. No scorching wind, no battling storm ever sweeps across this valley. All is mild and balmy. The crystal water flashes from many fountains and gurgles from leaping springs. In this sweet spot more than one poet abides, more than one artist makes his home, but the great attraction of the place is a massive, white, academic-looking structure, in the center of the valley. This building is indeed a college of learning. Within its lofty walls lessons are given and learned, not only in the usual arts and sciences, but, best of all, in the art of teaching, and of becoming competent to guide, instruct, and develop all the best powers of the little children. From this college in the Valley of Delight, spirits, men and women, youths and maidens, go forth to Floralia, to become teachers and guides for the little children who gather there. In this college school, even elderly men and women are entered as pupils, those who, having experienced earthly life without the advantages of education, or have passed through mortality confined to one department of learning. In our world every spirit receives the opportunity for acquiring an education, and all, at some time, avail themselves of it. There are many such schools of learning in the spiritual world, and they are of untold benefit to the inquiring soul. It would be useless for me to attempt to describe even a tenth part of the places I have visited, and scenes I have witnessed in the spiritual. Mortal language fails to convey a proper idea of certain phases of spirit life, even when the brain of our instrument can receive correctly the thoughts we impress upon it. To realize positively the beauties as well as the deformities, if I may be allowed to use the word in relation to the lower spheres of spirit life, one must be able to perceive them with spirit vision. Hence I have only attempted to convey to you a faint though real idea, so far as it extends, of what I have witnessed in other lands than those of Earth. The happy hunting ground of the Indians. Before I close this chapter, one must speak to you of that fair, peaceful, mountainous country of the spirit world, where the Indian race find a happy home. To reach this region from the cities of which I have spoken, one must go far out into the open country, through valleys and over hills, through deep forests and sunny glades, up, ever upward in his march, until at length he comes to an open stretch of green fields, where the mellow sunlight gleams and tiny flowers blossom. Beyond this level plain of verdure, a deep, blue, rolling river sweeps, its shining waves dancing in the sunlight under the quaint, canoe-like boats that rest upon them. Canalore, smiling river, I have heard these waters called, and it seems indeed a fitting name, for only peace and joy is suggested at the sight of its shining waves. Beyond this rolling river there is a deeply wooded country. Here you are up high among the mountains. This is the red man's home, his happy hunting ground, where no foe disturbs him, where no storms can come. The white race is welcome here as visitors, and a number live here as teachers to their dusky friends, but this is exclusively an Indian country. Throughout the deep forests, where cooling streamlets flow, and birds make merry music in the branches of the stately trees, the picturesque wigwams of the Indians stand, white and shining, embroidered with quills, feathers, and silks of every hue, hung with many colored hangings or curtains of silken texture, and ornamented with natural flowers, which give out sweet incense to the breezes. The young people of the race delight to weave flowery garlands with which to deck their homes. Out in the sunny glades of this region, where flowers of every kind bud and blossom, where the brooks murmur over mossy stones, and all life is glad, the great lodges of the country stand, at their schoolhouses and their council halls, and there they meet to give or gain instruction and to receive counsel from the wise chiefs whom they honor and love. Tribes here mingle together and dwell in unity. No hate, no anger, no fears disturb their minds. They grow in harmony, and gain that strength of mind which they send back to aid and assist the pale faces through their chosen mediums. Here the Indian finds rest and peace, gaining freedom, vigor, and strength from the waters, woods, and hills, growing gentle like the flowers, and mild as the evening breeze. His soul grows and expands in the power of love, and he gains knowledge not only from surrounding scenes, but through his intuitive faculties, which are receptive to truths, and likewise from learned and cultured beings from the higher spheres, who delight to teach the red man, and whom he in turn listens to with reverence and love. This beautiful country, fairer than mortal eye hath ever witnessed, has proved a blessing to many a weary spirit. Not only is it a refuge for the poor, hunted and despised Indian, who, fleeing from mortal chains, finds therein rest and peace, but it is also a haven of rest to many a poor, weary pale face, who, passing out from mortal life, uncared for and alone, is taken up by tender spirits into this blooming country, and amid its pure air and green hills, cared for by the tender Indian maid, he gains strength and ease of mind and body. Here, too, many little children gain strength and power to return to earth as messengers of light to weary hearts. And there are lyceums in the Indian country, lyceums, where lessons are learned from the singing brook, the mossy stone, the budding flower, and the warbling bird, where the grand march is made beneath archways of living green, and many colored banners are formed of blooming flowers, where life is natural, and where souls are happy and free. Chapter 6. Scenes and Incidents in the Spirit Land. As you gather around your cheerful firesides as mortals, and rejoice in the sweet associations and affections of the family circle, do you not sometimes think of those homes not made with hands, which the great army of your so-called dead inhabit? And do you not long to know something of them and their manner of existence? I have recently visited one of these homes in the spirit world, of which I will endeavor to tell you. Imagine a large, white building, surrounded by pleasant grounds, and shaded by lofty trees, similar to your trees of maple and oak, in form, construction, and surroundings much like a substantial, comfortable country seat of some well-to-do merchant in earth life. This home of which I speak is situated in Pleasant Valley. No wintry storms, no sudden waves of cold, no visitations of extreme heat, ever come to this place. The temperature of the valley is mild and delightful. There are many such homes as this of which I speak in Pleasant Valley, but they are not all inhabited by the same class of people. Trial and triumph. In this comfortable home dwell two beings, male and female, companions in every sense of the term, whose delight it is to minister to the wants of others. I know not all the roads of suffering they passed, but I do know that on earth, many years ago, this woman loved and trusted in this man, and through the force of circumstances and conditions, perhaps because of a vacillating, fickle nature, he abandoned her to the merciless scorn of an unpitying world. Left alone, friendless and unaided, to fight the battles of life, what wonder that she was plunged in despair? Her babe lived scarcely 3 months on earth, ere it passed to the spirit world. Crazed at this culmination of all her woes, the poor mother ended her mortal existence by suicide. For a time she led an aimless, restless existence in spirit, owing to the law of association drawing her back to former scenes, but soon, through the aid of ministering spirits, she was aroused to her true condition and prevailed upon to reach outward for a higher life. Her mother heart yearned and prayed for the tiny babe she had lost, when, lo, it was brought to her arms by tender mother spirits, who had tended and cared for it with loving kindness. Mother and child were taken to a bright home, where flowers bloomed and branches waved, where all was beautiful, and there was naught of selfishness or woe to mar the serenity of the scene. Here in Pleasant Valley, surrounded by loving helpers and guides, these two beings unfolded in sweetness and purity, their lives growing into harmony with all mankind. But the mother, whom I will call Mary, could not forget her early love. The object of her fondest affections was still dear to her soul, and in spite of unkindness, desertion, and neglect, her woman's heart went out to him in a devotion born of undying love. At times, she could feel something like a cord vibrating within her, as if with pain, and she would feel that the spirit of her dear one was calling her to him. At length she found him, still on earth, but, oh, how changed! Sorrow, want, and pain were marked on every feature. Oh, what tribulation and suffering had been his! Friends had died or deserted him, fortune had fled, and sickness marked him as her own. In hours of misery, thoughts of Mary had come to him. Bitterly did he repent his past conduct, sadly did he mourn over his wasted life. Soon he was called to the spirit world, but not at first did he find the angel of his dreams, though she was near, seeking to aid and assist him to throw off the clouds that pressed upon him, and to aid him to emerge from the terrible conditions that surged around him. It was impossible for her to announce her presence. At length, by the Herculean efforts of his will, by a determination to live for others instead of wholly for himself, he succeeded in throwing off the incubus that weighed upon his soul and confined it in the bondage of darkness. Then, what a glorious sight burst upon his awakened vision! At the face of her he once knew and loved, the face of her he had wronged, he beheld smiling upon him tenderly and peacefully, glorified by angelic love and pardon, while beside it gleamed another, a sweet, innocent, lovely, at the face of their angel child. It is impossible for others to realize the misery and anguish of a human heart, to comprehend the thorny path a soul may have to tread in its journey of purification. Therefore I cannot convey to you a knowledge of the suffering and sorrow these two beings experienced, at the one through betrayed confidence, the other through selfishness and wrongdoing, but we may well believe the anguish of the latter must ultimately have exceeded 10 times the suffering of the former, as the wrongdoer must meet with stings and scourges of conscience of which the wronged is never aware. A home for the weary. Led by Mary and her child into paths of peace, and at last pleasantness, the erring spirit began to blossom out from old conditions, and to develop depths of goodness in his nature, undreamed of hitherto. At length, it became their desire to open a spiritual home of peace and comfort for such weary souls, who, like our friend Mary, are forced out of mortal existence by the relentless hand of despair and to surround them with that sweet magnetism of love that serves to assuage their sorrows and strengthen their hearts. Consequently, this beautiful home in Pleasant Valley, surrounded by shaded walks, rippling streams, blooming flowers, and smiling fields, is sustained by them as a refuge for weary, heart-sick souls, who through misery, want or neglect, have passed out from earth by their own act. Within, the apartments are pleasantly situated, commanding views of the joyous scene without, comfort, and even luxury, abound. The furnishing of the house is such as to please the eye and harmonize with the senses, form, color, and texture all blend in perfect unison. Seclusion and privacy may be had by those who will, cheerful companionship also is freely offered. Surely such a house of refuge, such a home of peace, must be welcome to a weary, storm-tossed soul. Content in their work for others, Mary and her companion pass their time, constantly devising something new for the amelioration of human suffering, or giving of their energy and influence to strengthen and encourage the morally weak and blind. As teachers, helpers and guides, they are invaluable to others, and their labors follow them in the blessing and appreciation of all. Serenity and peace are stamped upon their features, while their forms, clad in simple robes, shine with dignity, hand in hand they pass through life, happy in each other and in their work. What shall we say of their child, a innocent, star-eyed Stella, a she who returns to earthly scenes daily, as a missionary of light and peace to weary mortals, who brings an influence of benevolence to the hearts of the affluent, that they may bestow their bounty upon those in need, who soothes the weary and sad, and carries a blessing wherever she goes. She is a missionary of light, performing a noble work in guiding sorrow-stricken hearts to a haven of rest. The angels bless her, as mortals would do, were they aware of her presence in their midst, at times, when a deep influx of strength and consolation flows out from her life to theirs, and they know not whence it comes. A few words more, those happy, calm, and quiet beings, who at present inhabit the home in Pleasant Valley, Ave Mary Home, as we love to call it, they would never be recognized as the sorrowful, hollow-eyed, unhappy creatures who not long since dragged their weary frames through the streets of earth. Now, peace and content are theirs, affection and sympathy feed their lives, and their hearts are no longer starved for the sustenance they crave. But these beings will not always remain here. One by one, as they become strengthened and refreshed, as they become imbued with a desire to help others, they pass out to other scenes, to new labors, and new associations, where, as missionaries, they will continue to work for others, leaving sweet memories to cluster around the old home, and bright influences which bless and strengthen the weary ones who are brought to fill their places. Such is the work accomplished in the Mary Home, such the life spent by those who, through much tribulation and sorrow, have found the dawn of a new existence. We do not scorn a spirit for what it has been, we honor it for its efforts to advance and grow into something better, for in this way happiness, peace, and blessing come to humanity. The condition of one selfish on earth, passing through the various places and conditions of the spirit world, on missionary or beneficent purposes intent, one comes in contact with strange and startling scenes and people, presenting a weird and uncouth appearance, as well as with those bearing the impress of suffering and woe. I well remember one being with whom I was brought into association by a beautiful spirit, whose delight it is ever to work out some benefit to others. This being, to whose side I was brought, was a female, tall, gaunt, unhappy. Her garments seemed to be formed of a heterogeneous mass of fabric, of every color and texture, presenting at once a grotesque and unnatural appearance. AOC, she said, as I gazed upon her, see my fine robes, how beautiful, how rich, I hid my jewels, that none should find them, I cut up my handsome dresses, that none could wear them when I was dead, I hid my gold, that none should spend it in riotous living, and see, I have them all here again, in these beautiful robes of mine. It was plainly to be seen that this unfortunate creature believed what she said, presenting a pitiable appearance to others. To herself she appeared to be the perfect ideal of dignity and beauty. I soon learned the secret of her deplorable condition. On earth this woman had been cursed with great wealth. I say cursed, for to her spirit it had indeed proved a curse, narrowing her intellect in the eager pursuit of more wealth, and warping her spiritual faculties to a truly lamentable extent. While not denying herself the luxuries of life, she yet refused to spend one penny for the comfort of others. Indeed, so selfish and greedy had she grown, that she could not bear to see others enjoying one grain of the wealth and luxury which she possessed, and she determined that since she must die, she did not believe in a future life, nor in the existence of a higher power than man, since she must leave all she possessed, no one else should enjoy it. And so she had destroyed her riches and garments, and hidden much of her jewelry and gold, so that after she was dead, her relatives would fail to benefit by them. This woman had lived alone on earth, a solitary, haughty, mercenary being, and in this spirit of unrest she had passed out into the eternal world, only to find herself stripped of all wealth, grandeur, and honor, a poor, wretched creature. But as yet she had not aroused to this fact, She felt herself a dethroned queen. She did not realize the utter poverty and squalor of her surroundings. Her only desire seemed to be to keep the gold and jewels hidden from the light of day. I was much interested in this spirit. I sought to awaken some sense of justice, honor, and benevolence within her soul, but without avail.